Welcome to the CDOT Podcast, presented by Enquirer Sports. I am Josh Sneed. I will be one of your hosts for this, along with C. Trent Rosecrans. How are you, sir?
Fantastic.
Trent, you prefer Trent, just yeah, when we're talking.
When we're talking, when we're the humans, but, you know.
We're always human.
Some of us.
But are we, Dance? Okay, three people got the Killers reference. Terrific. We are live at the Motor Pub in downtown Cincinnati, Ohio. This podcast is going to be baseball centered. We want to kind of get away from the typical interview style shows that maybe you're accustomed to on the radio, and sort of have a more relaxed, laid back, conversational type. Maybe have a longer chance to talk about things that normally wouldn't if you were constricted by time. So we'll have different guests, and be sure to follow everybody on Twitter, C. Trent, at C. Trent. I am at Josh Sneed, Enquirer Sports, and what is it, Cincy Enquirer?
I believe so.
There you go. Follow them, and that way you'll be sure to know when the next episode of this is. The first guest, the inaugural guest for the podcast, I want to get your title right, because it's impressive. He is the Director of Baseball Research and Analysis for the Cincinnati Reds. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our first guest of the show, Sam Grossman.
The title is just a collection of vague terms that doesn't really mean anything. So,
and it's better than Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
Seriously, how often do you get introduced as Jonah Hill, the Peter Brand thing?
It's not the introduction. It's like when I'm at a wedding and I tell someone what I do.
And your girlfriend has to say.
No, they usually come up with themselves. They say, oh, so you're like the fat guy in Moneyball, right? And I say, yeah, I guess, kind of.
But on this show, that's actually Trent.
Yeah.
You do that. Okay. I probably won't be here for the second episode.
I keep it around because you can make that joke, because, you know.
Well, we're recording, so I'm sure I'll hear about it when we're done recording, but right now it's hilarious. Did that movie change your life because of how much it got sort of the every man like me talking about Moneyball and statistics?
I don't know if it changed my life. I actually didn't see it for like 2 years until after it came out. But
oh, you're one of those guys. You're one of those actors. It's like I don't watch my.
I think I'm just lazy. But the book. I read the book back when it came out, in like 01, 02. So I think that helped me get along the track of thinking about that, doing that as a career, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I think the movie made it more. Just made it out more in the public. Of something that happens behind the scenes in the front offices.
Like all the planes you take to go do trades in person?
Yes, exactly.
You do a lot of those?
Exactly.
I see Walt just crisscrossing across the nation.
Right. It made our travel budget just go through the roof when we realized we had to start doing that. Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Yeah, Walt probably never gets. So you're the Brad Pitt of the Reds.
You know what? Actually,
he actually plants people to say that. You know, as the third person in a conversation.
That's what the interns are for?
Right.
but actually, speaking of interns, you started as an intern, isn't this correct?
Yep.
Give us the Jonah Hill origin story.
Sure. So I went to school and then didn't have a baseball job. I worked in an insurance company.
Wait. When you went to school, you didn't go to school like I did. You have a mathematics degree.
Yep.
So did you go to Northwestern thinking, I'm going to get a mathematics degree and go into baseball?
No, not at all. When I was 17 or 18, I had no idea what I was doing, and I kind of still don't. But so I actually started in just the general arts and sciences, and also a double major in music, because I had no idea what I was doing. So I dropped that right away because I realized that other people were practicing,
right.
You know, 8 to 10 hours a day, and I was doing like 2, so I wasn't keeping up there. But no, it was just one of those things where I kind of have always. I don't know if I'd even say I like math, but it's just sort of fit with how my brain works, and so I stuck with it, and that's what I ended up doing. So then I worked at an insurance company as an actuary, which is setting rates and that sort of thing, and it was.
Speaking of Brad Pitt movies, was that what in Fight Club? Is that what?
Oh yeah, I think, or he was an adjuster or something. Yeah. Exactly.
Good pull.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So when I
that's
wasn't.
That's why I'm here.
When I wasn't robbing liposuction factories to make soap on the side, I was working at an insurance company, and it was as exciting as it sounds. So
then you kicked your own ass.
Yeah.
Got out of it, was hired by the Reds.
Exactly. End of story.
You kicked Bob Miller's ass, and that's how you got the job, right?
In downtown Cincinnati.
I was, you know, I was on the porch with Meatloaf. He was crying. We were crying. That went off on a tangent. So, yeah, so I realized, you know, it wasn't what I wanted to do. At the winter meetings every year, they have this great thing. It's called the Minor League Baseball Job Fair. So I went to that. I didn't know anything about what I was doing.
That for those of us who go, those are the people in ties.
Yes.
It's great because you can always tell, like, young people in ties at the winter meetings are looking for jobs.
They're called the job seekers, capital J, capital S.
The homeless people at the bar are the reporters. And then the people staying away from the homeless people at the bar are all the executives.
That's about right.
Yeah.
And I'm the guy outside with
you're the
book full of 8x10s.
That everybody's avoiding, even us. So that we're not the bottom of the level.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks. It's good to be here.
Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. There, so I went there. I kind of got a couple offers for internships just because I was out of school and I said I would do anything at any time, which people liked, I guess. So I ended up working at just in the clubhouse of a team in the New York Penn League, the New Jersey Cardinals, who don't exist anymore.
Wait, the Penn League? Like,
this is
short season.
Yeah. Yeah. The big house.
Stole a car.
Just a summer league up in New Jersey. Almost in Pennsylvania. So I did that, and it was one of those things where I said to myself, you know, if I hate it, I'll just go back and do something else. But I kind of liked it for some reason. You know, slept in the clubhouse and everything.
So, like,
nuts.
You lived in the, you're one of those guys that lived in the clubhouse. I know these clubhouses in minor leagues.
Yeah. So I did that one summer. You know, I was picking guys up from the airport and all that jazz. So got lucky. I sort of went back to my old job for that winter and then sent out resumes again and ended up getting another internship with the Red Sox at their Fort Myers facility. So spring training and then extended spring, which is where the young guys stay if they don't make a club. And then all the way through the rookie ball season. So just doing like hotel rooming lists and all picking people up from the airport again, all that type of stuff. And then the next year, sent out resumes again, got a video internship with the Brewers doing like charting pitches for the upcoming opponents. And then was supposed to do the same thing again for the Reds the next year and ended up getting hired. So worked my way around many stops.
What years were these?
Let's see. It was 04 through 07.
So you'd already read Moneyball and you knew this.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I wasn't.
But, I mean, you knew that there was something
I got some
out
good,
there.
Yeah, I got some good advice saying, you know, don't take like a minor league ticket internship. Because you're just going to be, you know, working with the minor league people, at least get something associated with the team. And then, you know, I was working closely with the coaches every day when a front office person come through. I at least got to talk to them.
Well,
and so,
one of the things I think is really interesting, and we've talked about this, is how many guys in the front office started as interns with the Reds?
At least 4 or 5.
I mean, yeah. I think that, you know, like if you think about everybody corporate life, that's still a pretty good ratio, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we sort of treat it almost like a full year interview,
Tryout,
I guess.
Yeah.
You know, not that we have people in. We joked about it that we should have a reality show about it. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you come in and if you have a spot open, you definitely know who does a good job and who doesn't over the course of a year. And so I think people are more comfortable with that than just
like, because I remember
resumes.
Jeff Grappe working as a video guy with the hitters and doing that. And then now Jeff is the director of player development, so he's in charge of all the minor leagues. I mean, and so, like, I still kind of every once in a while think of Jeff as the guy back in the room getting stuff done. But, I mean, there's so many of these guys that work their way out.
Yep.
Nick, guy who runs it.
Nick was an intern for the A's actually in that Moneyball year.
He's in the book.
And he claims he's in the movie. You can, like, see him run out to the home plate and grab a bat, but no one's ever actually seen it.
So when you say you had to chart pitches, like, how many hours a day is that in? Is it like the data entry of baseball?
Kind
that's
of.
What it sounds like.
Yeah, it's more automated now that there's services that do it, and a lot of it's just spits out of the websites. But, yeah, when I was doing it for the Brewers, they had different HR regulations, so we could only work 9 to 5. But it was like you get there at 9, And if you can do three games in a day, you know, so that's 9 hours, and you just bang it out. And I actually didn't, this is a true story, I really didn't drink coffee at all until that year. And then, you know, get to like 11 a.m. and I still had to do two more games. You know, and so it's just, a pitch comes, you click, go, stop, you put in the velocity, the pitch type, line drive to center field, double, over and over and over and over again. And it's fun because you're watching baseball, but it also
so this is
sort of melts your
one.
Brain as well. Yeah. So yeah, that's when I started drinking coffee.
So like on Moneyball, like Scott Hatterberg was the diamond in the rough, mm-hmm. per se, of the A's. Is there a guy that you've kind of been responsible for saying, take a chance on this guy, and it worked out, and you can kind of hang your hat on it?
I don't think
Joey
there's...
Bottom.
Yes, yes.
Is it a Burger King in Toronto?
This guy's got it.
There's not one person on the major league side that I can claim that I, you know, plucked out of nowhere. There were a couple
great
minor
working
league...
by me getting this guy. Hey, yeah, how important are you?
Not at all. Right now.
There was this minor league guy named Doug Salinas that I recommended, and he didn't go anywhere. no, but it's so remember that name if he ever makes a comeback.
I mean, wrong.
We have a pretty collaborative office, so you know it's really just things sort of come together organically.
Kinda,
I feel like
you kind of have a luxury that the scouts don't, where your recommendations are based on statistical hard facts. Like you're,
yep.
Whereas the scout kind of seems, I mean, probably to some degree is more.
I mean, that's no, not anymore, right?
Yeah, I mean, we put it all together. You know, that's one of the neat things about the baseball scouting is they put these tool grades on everyone. So those are kind of numbers that we feed into the system also. So it kind of all works together. And I think the scouts would actually say the opposite of what you're saying. You know, they're saying, I'm just looking at
the movie
Moneyball.
Yeah. Yeah. I read the
that
book.
That one guy was a dickhead.
I don't know. The way we do it, it kind of all works together. You know, and our philosophy is that it's all just information out there, so why would you not use something that's there? But I think the scouts would say the opposite, you know, especially for some of the newer stats like defensive numbers and that sort of thing. They would say, I'm seeing the guy in person, so I feel much more comfortable with that than you should with, you know, numbers that maybe you can trust, maybe you can't.
But also when it comes down to stats and hard numbers, it's data that everyone has access to. So, like, how do you sort of separate yourself within the business of seeing something in the numbers that other people don't?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's getting harder and harder because it's actually getting easier to sort of get all the information statistically about a guy. And so, you know, I think we try to just make sure that our numbers are representing how Walt and the front office people think about it. So, you know, maybe we care more about not striking out, you know, and hitting line drives or something like that, for example. And so we're trying to represent what our philosophy of what represents winning baseball on the field versus another team might think of it another way. So I don't know if we're doing it better than anyone's, but I think we have ours sort of streamlined to match up to what our philosophies are.
What factors go into that? I mean, like the ballpark you play in, the league you play in, the division you play in?
In terms of?
You saying what you value.
Or the other players that you have already.
Yeah, I think it's all of that. I mean, I think it's who's on the team right now. I think it's, you know, the front office and the coaching staff also, you know, I'm sure it'll change now that Price is here in some ways. And, you know, it's just based on sort of Walt.
That's not official yet. Right? Is that the big thing that all these...
The coaches, the manager is official, like Jeff Pico,
Long,
Jay Bell, those guys aren't official. Sam cannot comment on that.
Yeah, I don't know anything.
Doesn't know
I don't know nothing.
Brian Pena, you can... Somebody else. Who's the other guy? Yeah. Schumacher, you don't know anything
about
that guy.
He hasn't signed yet.
Yeah.
Yet.
I don't want to get Sam in trouble. I was just kidding. Let's move on.
But, no, I mean, I think it's just how, you know, Walt, he had winning teams in Colorado. He had winning teams in St. Louis. So I think it's just him and the other front office people, you know, have their own thoughts about what makes a winning team and what doesn't. And so we try to incorporate that all into our analysis.
So is Walt one of those guys that, like, you can't look him in the eye? You have to, nobody can speak to him except through a secretary?
No, he's very personable. He's easy to talk to. And I mean, it's, you know, it's...
Can you tell him to call me back?
I will. Yeah.
If he checks his voicemail, there's a call for me.
We should get like a carrier pigeon service.
I met him in spring training and he was quoting The Hangover, which I was pretty impressed by.
You're easily impressed. Walt and every like 16-year-old boy can impress Josh Sneed.
But no, it's pretty.
I'm gonna be nice.
It's pretty laid back in the office. You know, I feel like we can all feel comfortable about having, you know, speaking our minds and that sort of thing. So you know, everyone gets in bad moods and you just need to know when to not barge in there and ask to go on vacation for 2 weeks or something.
Do you guys get vacation?
Not really. But
this is it.
Yeah, exactly.
OTR.
Can I leave for 2 hours and then I'll be back?
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
So what's crazier, like during the season or during the off season, like right now?
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely more hours during the season, you know, because we sort of get there at 9 or 10 in the morning, and if it's a night game, we're there the whole time. And now it's more normal, 8:30 or 9 to 6 or something like that.
You're talking to a comedian. That...
So that's like 9 p.m. to 2 a.m.?
10:30.
That makes sense.
You know, the people who you bill for your other services can right, listen to this, so 10 hours a day.
So it's more, I guess at this point in the year, it's more long-term planning type stuff, which is, it's also fun in a different type of way.
So how much, like when, without speaking to anything specific, when we see stuff on Twitter or MLB trade rumors, mm-hmm. like, is that when you, do you find stuff out that way, or do you just have to not tell anybody? Like, is that hard to keep secrets of stuff you know is coming? That,
I don't know. So, sometimes we know something, and I don't know. I don't want to. I wouldn't be the one to get in trouble or being, you know, called the guy that's leaking information. So I wouldn't do anything. But there's times where it is on the internet, and that's when I find out about it. Honestly, so.
That's crazy.
Not if it's something really important, but. You know, and we try to just talk, and, you know, if someone hears something, we'll pass the information along and that sort of thing.
Did you hear they traded for Shinsu Chu?
Did I hear it back then?
Yeah.
I think I knew that when
it
was going to happen.
I mean, well, because yeah. I know we've talked about this. There was a lot, numbers-wise, that went into that trade. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you guys had to think about it. What went into, say, what did anybody come to you, well, how do you think Chu would fit in here?
Yeah, well, the big one that we talked about was sort of transitioning him from right field to center field.
Right.
And that was one where, yeah, they specifically asked us that question, and we did look into it and how it would translate. And I think it worked out end.
Did your, it did.
Defensively,
But did your numbers and your, because you did projections.
Yep.
About what you thought he would hit, how many runs he would help mm-hmm. offensively versus what it would hurt defensively.
Yep.
How did your projections kind of line up at the end of the year?
Yeah, I think he was better than we thought he would be offensively. A lot of it was probably because of the hit-by-pitches. You know, there's
right.
no way you could have seen that coming. But
I
think it was about what we thought defensively. You know, I saw a couple numbers that had him way down, but he sort of crept back up at the end of the year. And I think it was really because he was getting more comfortable with the position and, you know, just being more aggressive going after
balls.
How
much did
it
help? I mean, because with him, I mean, most of the time he was with Jay. And by most numbers, Jay had a fantastic
yep.
season in right
yep.
field. So that kind of... I mean, you expected Jay to be good, but maybe he was a little bit better because he knew Chu was there.
Yeah, once they got used to each other, you know, he was going and getting balls way in the gaps. And it also helped that we just have a small outfield. So putting him out there between, especially when Heise was out there, you know, two good corner guys defensively, that helped us make the decision, I think, too.
So do you assess, you would probably assign numbers to assess what someone's worth in terms of how much it'll cost to sign them,
yep.
do the same thing for how much if it's worth keeping them.
Yeah, we have some models that talk about what we think the guy would be worth on the free agent market. You know, it's fluid in the sense that teams are valuing different things differently at different times, but also just as more money gets in the game, the salaries are going up and up. So that's one of the bigger challenges, is just knowing how much money people are going to throw at guys. And so...
And this year, this offseason especially, right, because with the new TV deals that are kicking in, like,
yeah,
everyone's payroll went up by, what, 20 or 30 million, I think I heard on the radio.
I think
roughly,
that,
I mean, just in extra money that they didn't have before.
It sounds like that's not entirely going to be the case. I don't know how much of this I'm allowed to talk about before Bud comes in and shoots me in the head or something.
No,
but
he's got his people.
I mean, I heard him talking about it on the radio, and I thought they made an interesting point that there's not a ton of big-name free agents. So guys like Chew or,
yep,
you know, well, Cano probably being the biggest name.
Yeah, no, there's definitely more money.
Like, role-player guys are going to get insane contracts,
yeah,
because...
Well, it's that, and also teams are just valuing how much young guys are worth, you know, because they don't get paid a lot. So everyone's locking those guys up, you know, before they become a free agent. And so there's just fewer and fewer guys out there that are free agents. And so that's making it tough also.
Do we all agree that that's good for the game, though? Like,
the fewer free agents? And I think locking guys up, like, if you have a young guy that you like.
To build
a
team that way instead of, like, we'll just bring this guy in and win it a year, and then we'll be back to sucking.
And more often than not, going out and signing a big free agent, it almost never works out as well as you think it's going to. Because, you know, you're competing with the other clubs, so you end up paying him at the peak of his performance, and then he goes down. So it's just really tough to get a good deal on the free agent market.
I'm not laughing at you. We're in the basement. There's a water
we might get
right
peed
above
on.
Us. And someone
flushed.
Sure toilet water is flowing right above us right now while I'm trying to get a serious answer.
I forget what the original question was.
I did too.
Something about toilet water.
It's so fascinating to me, though, because, you know, being a Reds fan since I was a did like baseball, you know, I remember years where I never knew better that they had less money to spend than other
right.
teams. So the fact that they were winning when I was a kid was not only awesome, but awesome that they were doing it with such a smaller salary.
Yeah.
Now that I kind of understand that stuff, you know, it's disheartening when you hear, like, the Red Sox complain about how much money the Yankees spend.
Exactly.
When they
it's ridiculous.
Spend, like, $70 million more than the Reds.
Yeah, definitely. And we, you know, we try to remind our ownership and those people that, you know, our goal is to be as efficient as possible, but we also want to win games. And so,
right.
yeah, it's all about how many games you win per the dollars you spend. So we definitely keep that in mind.
Well, plus with the social media and how many blogs there are, and that information seems a lot more accessible probably than it used to be as well. So
yeah.
you have to.
I think people talk about it more. I mean, we talk about the salaries more than ever.
Yep.
I mean, then you know, when I was growing up, who knew what everybody made? Now, you know, it's like.
Yeah, there's
like,
that one USA Today
right,
thing that came out every year.
Came
yeah.
out, and now it's like, well, shoot, he still has 3 years of arbitration. And, you know, I think we're more savvy as fans than we were in the past.
And everybody
because
feels like because they have a Twitter account or a Facebook that they have to weigh in their opinion. Because, you know, I mean, I can't imagine that you guys
what
give
Sam,
a crap
why did you look at me
that?
And smile when he said that? Like, oh, this asshole always tells us what this is a bad signing. When did I say that?
Well, I get it with comedy, too. I mean, it's just, no matter what you do, if you're in a... You know, present yourself to a forum for a comment, you're going to get,
yep.
you know, I know you're not going to speak to this, but it's the news right now. Like, you're going to get half of the city that swears they'll never go to another Reds game if Brandon Phillips leaves a team, and then you have the other half that's like...
Is Brandon Phillips leaving the team?
It's so...
not that I know.
Okay. There you go.
But you get what I'm saying, though, right? Like, you can't worry about pleasing everyone... And individually, you have to do what you think will bring people to Bar Park, which primarily is win games. But at the same time, the Castellinis, in my opinion, have done a better job than the previous owners or like the owners of the Bengals in terms of making the experience at the ballpark enjoyable enough that no matter how well the team's doing, you know you're going to have a good time by being there.
No, I think that's true. Yeah, and I mean, you said it right, where people might complain about a move we make or don't make. But over the long run, people are going to come to the games if we're winning. And so that's one of the things that, you know, I just started. But that's one of the things that I think Walt does really well is he doesn't listen to what's out there in the media and that sort of thing, you know, and makes his own decisions. I don't think there's probably not any GMs that make decisions based on the media, but he definitely doesn't let it affect him. And so I think, you know, people were out on the blogs and everything were a little bit wishy-washy on the Latos trade when we made it and a couple of the signings, you know, trading for Roland and that sort of thing. And now that those things have worked out well, you know, we won games, and that's why people are coming to the games, not because, no offense, but we don't have Edwin Encarnacion anymore or something like that, you know. You're a big Edwin fan?
No. I'm just saying that wasn't a particular name where I saw many people go, well, I'm never going to a game.
I was being sarcastic.
I know you were, but it's just, I don't know. It bugs me as a fan because, you know, people, the same people that get all excited when they sign these crazy contracts, and then you realize, oh, well, that probably wasn't a good idea 3 years from now.
Right.
I mean, the Yankees are obviously dealing with it. But than anybody else.
That's what I don't get. I mean, maybe if you went out and signed the biggest guy out there. Like, I'm sure if we somehow signed Cano, we would probably get an attendance bump.
You heard it here first, you guys. No, we didn't.
But, you know, say we got some really good pitcher, like, I don't know.
Kershaw.
Yeah. He's too good. But yeah, say we got like, say we signed Grinke or someone, you know, some fans know about him, but he's not a big enough name that you're going to, I don't think that's going to in itself increase attendance. I really do think it's about winning.
It used to though, right? I mean, like,
I don't know.
When
I mean,
Greg Vaughn came here or somebody like that did well. I mean, am I wrong? Were you like, Griffey,
that makes sense. I mean, he was.
Yeah, I mean, but Griffey was, again, like at that time, that was.
He was probably the best player in baseball.
Yeah. And or at least, well, Bonds probably was, but he was at least acknowledged and seen that way.
Right.
You know, we can all go in that. But yeah, that's an interesting
point. I'm not going to defend my Greg Bonds statement to you people, but he was a particular signing where I was like, that guy was a star on another team, and now he's here instead of leaving here and goes to be a star on another
right.
team.
Right.
Shut up, you guys.
All right, well, I mean, I want to get back to, like, what you do. Do
sure.
you sit around and, like, just are you over a computer all day, or do they, you know, hey, you know, Walt comes up, you. Write me about, figure out about this free agent pitcher or this guy. I mean, is it almost like assignment based, or are you going out there Sherlocking on your own?
Right. It's mostly the first one.
Yeah.
I'm generally just sitting in front of a computer. but it's a lot of different things, and that's what makes it fun. It really kind of is something different every day. But a lot of it, especially in the off season, is updating all of our models and that sort of thing. So the player
when
projections.
When you say models, is that like a stat, or is it like stuff that you guys come up with that, you know, isn't what I can find on Fangraphs?
I'd say it's more the system that we use to project what a player is going to do in the future.
So your own, like, Zips or Pagoda
yeah.
type thing?
Yeah.
And so you have this? Is this, like, a formula you came up with? The Sam Grossman?
We've collectively created it. And
so
that
how
goes...
How much of the stats that you use are proprietary, things that only the Reds use?
You know, we'll look at Baseball Reference and Fangraphs, and then I think we just have our own numbers in conjunction with that.
Do they usually line up?
For the most part, they do. I think we want them to be a little different, mm-hmm. you know, because that's, if they're exactly the same, all three across, you're pretty confident that that's what.
You?
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. He's just copying and pasting all this stuff, and he's been doing it for 8 years.
But when Walt listens to this, he's going to be pissed when he hears that.
Did you even answer? Did I interrupt you answering?
You interrupted, but that's fine. Just go ahead. Walk all over me.
Okay. How much of your data is like, it's obviously used on whether to sign or keep players and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. How much of it is used for, like, day-to-day lineups? Is it just as important for that kind of thing, too, in terms of, like, who to play against specific pitchers or situations within?
Yeah, that's – they're not all, I guess, right in the same system. We're doing it all at different times, but we provide the coaches with an advanced scouting
okay,
report
that's
for
what
each
I was
series.
Ask, is like,
yeah.
Do you have, like, is there in-game updates of, like, right now, you know, like something he can reference to say, like.
Yeah, there's not communication in game, but we put together a report for each coach for each series. So, you know, it's got the matchups, it's got, you know, the left-right splits for each player. We started doing some pretty neat things as we've gotten better and better data. You know, we can look at umpire strike zones, so you can think about, like, where you might be able to steal a strike or, you know, where the umpire is going to screw you. A lot of things with, like, fielding, you know, you've seen, we don't do it really extreme, but a lot of teams are doing these crazy fielding alignments and that sort of thing. So that's all the type of stuff that we're giving to the coaches before each series.
Do you think the new management is more open? I mean, the new field staff is probably going to be more open to some of the things that you guys are doing than the old one?
You know, honestly, the old staff liked having information, and
they just didn't use it. I'm sorry. I'll shut up again.
But yeah, I haven't met any of the guys that may or may not exist at this point.
But you know Brian, there's a difference between who pulls the trigger and who doesn't mm-hmm. on certain things, and who fills out that lineup and who does that thing that, you know, that you have a guy with a 262 on base percentage batting yep. second and getting the second most at-bats.
No, Brian has said that he wants to sit down with us, and I think we're going to just talk through everything we do. I honestly don't know how many teams
right.
the front office tells the manager what the lineup should be.
Right.
I've never been anywhere that's done that. I honestly can't answer that. But in terms of what the reports we're going to do, you know, we always tell them that we can do anything you want. We have so much data now, and it's broken down pitch by pitch that anything they want to see, we can create it. So I'm excited that to just sort of see where that goes.
Well, how much, I mean, is this a lot of it data mining? You know, and they talk about the field FX coming in, and there's mm-hmm. going to be even more data. At what point is there too much?
Yeah, we have a guy that works in our office that manages all of our data systems, and he's really good. So he's set up a thing where we can just go in and pull all of it without needing to know, you know, computer coding and that sort of thing.
Right.
So it's getting to the point where, you know, Rob, the video guy, or even some of the coaches can go in, you know, and it's all just sort of drop downs in Excel and that sort of thing, and they can pull up a lot of the information as long as we set it up. And so that's, I think, where we're getting more and more advanced, is it's just how fast you can get all the information.
Where do you think the Reds are in this spectrum of people who value the numbers and the statistical analysis?
I bet we're right in the middle. You know, I like I was saying earlier, I think we use all sides of it. On sort of the off-season planning type of stuff, I bet it's close to 50-50.
No.
And it's really not. I know the media, no offense, tries to make it like a fight against each other.
Well,
it's really not.
I think some media does. Some of us, you know, have talked to people and realized that that was like a 10-year-old, you know, but 10 years ago there may have been some sort of debate.
Right.
But now it's...
For us, it's not like that at all. And we'll have really fun discussions with the scouts.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see, because our goal is to make it represent the same things that the scouts are seeing, because what's happening on the field is what's happening on the field. So I've told you this before. One of my big pet peeves is just making up stats for the sake of making them up. You know, so
okay, that's a good point. Which stats do you like? Which stats that I can go on Fangraphs? What matters? Yeah, what influences the game, and what do you use to say, no, this guy, he's good.
Right. I'm a big fan of pitchers striking guys out and hitters not striking out. I think that's huge. So, yeah, I mean, we've talked about this. I think, obviously a guy that hits for power is going to help your team. I think power might be a little bit overrated. But for a hitter, a guy that doesn't strike out and walks a little bit and hits line drives, it's almost impossible for him to be a bad player. You know, someone like Marco Scudero, he's putting the ball in play and he's hitting line drives. He's going to have to hit 290.
Right.
If he's doing that, you know what I mean? And so it's sort of the opposite for pitchers, where if you're striking guys out and not walking them, and then I guess the third thing is keeping the ball on the ground, that's what's going to lead to...
Is that a controllable skill?
Ground balls?
Yeah,
yeah, definitely. And you can kind of see that in minor leaguers, too.
So like, that's one of the things you're looking for in minor leaguer. You're not looking at, well, this guy has a 6 ERA in the minors. You're looking to see that he misses bats and the...
I usually only look at Winning percentage and RBIs are the most.
Oh, that's a good nerd joke.
Do batters or pitchers, one or the other, like, get into the stats more? Or are the stats more important to help your pitchers face a batter or help your batters face a pitcher?
I think the hitters are more reacting. I think hitters can get themselves in trouble if they look at the information too much, because even if, say, a guy throws 80% fastballs on a certain count, there's still a 20% chance, you know, and so you don't want that type of stuff happening in the hitter's head because he's the one reacting. I think the pitchers can definitely, you know, look at the zones where a guy has success and doesn't have success, and the pitches and, you know, movement and that sort of thing that hitters don't have success against. Yeah. He can use that, he and the catcher can use that to their advantage. So I think it's definitely more the pitchers than the hitters, I would say.
Any pitchers that, I mean, do you have any interaction with the players?
Not much. I usually go through
Rob,
who works in the video room. I'll talk to guys here and there. I don't know. The guy that we added recently is Mac Jenkins, who was the assistant pitching coach.
Mac.
And he, you know, he watches a ton of video. He goes through all the numbers. So one of the big reasons why our pitching has been so good the past couple of years is just the preparation and the game planning. And I think he's really good at using all of the aspects of, you know, listening to our scouts, watching video on his own, just talking to other people around the game, but also looking at the stats and understanding, you know, he'll be on FanGraphs. He'll send me an article that he finds and say, hey, what do you think about this? So he's a pretty fun person to talk to about that type
of
stuff.
Yeah, Mac's a great guy to begin with. But, yeah, that's interesting. And then I know, like, you know, I've talked a little bit to, say, Jay Bruce and Joey Votto, the guys who really kind of are interested in these numbers and do look at these things, and we'll look up FanGraphs and we'll discuss user and we'll discuss, you know, when.
Is that how you pronounce it? I've never known.
User? Is that how you pronounce it? How
I think I say UZR. I don't know.
I just say user. It's easier. It's easier. I like it. Screw you.
Fair enough.
But, like, you know, when you talk about positional rankings and how that factors in war, and is that enough and is that right? Mm-hmm. But are there some guys that may use this, and is there any way that it will help a batter?
I think you could use it to sort of recognize where your flaws are. Mm-hmm. You know, not to pick someone out, but I think someone like Bruce, if he's looking at, you know, you can see that he hits a lot of balls in the air, which helps his him hit home runs, but also he's hitting for a lower average. And so, you know, I'm not saying he's trying to change anything, but if you're someone that buys into that type of stuff, you and the fact that it is publicly available, or you can, you know, Rob knows about that stuff, I know about it. So I think having the information out there could help you sort of assess yourself as a player a lot more and more quickly than you used to be able to.
Very good. Well,
let's take a quick break.
So if and, you want to beer or bathroom,
get a drink or use restroom, we'll come back. We'll do take some questions if any of you have questions, and then we'll wrap it up. So we'll be right back on the CBAT podcast. Just like two or three, like 4 minutes, something like all right. That.
Yeah, like we'll do five. Take five.
Give them at least five.
Okay.
Okay.
Five minutes.
Yeah.
Do you guys need a beer?
I'll take a beer. Or do I take?
I'll take a beer. It's the Matry.
This is either the Bells or the Red Hook from the tap.
It's intense.
Are these off? Or?
I don't. No, they're on. I don't know where they go off. Josh, how you doing? Good to see you, man. Thanks for coming out.
Hey. Nice to meet you. Oh, yeah. No, it's fun.
Yeah, this is great.
Hopefully we're not boring anyone or anything like that.
No, we bring it. Really
yeah.
Yeah. Totally won.
Definitely. No, it's totally a good won. Idea. Anytime you need someone to fill in again, let me know. So I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, totally. Careful what you wish.
I literally thought you guys were, you've been talking about this.
December 17th?
Yeah,
December 17th. I mean, we might overgrow this room next time. I mean, because... I mean, no offense to Sam.
Sam, Jesus. Right there.
We're going to have Sam with Karis. I mean, we're going to have him later.
Oh, yeah. I'm not offended. Yeah.
But the problem is then finding another Sam for January.
He said he's ready to do it again. We just keep rolling just him
the,
out.
The Sam.
This is alternate.
Sam like cast.
Beyond the Stripes.
Yeah.
I just pray for him. I just make sure to get Marvin Jones every time I need someone. It's like, Marvin Jones is... Carolyn, I was texting Carolyn.
Are you going to make shirts of that logo?
They have it, because he owns a shirt company.
Oh, really?
So they're already online.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. This all came together. Yeah, did you see the stick?
I did.
Beard on a stick. Just absolutely ridiculous.
Who came up with the idea? Did it just sort of come up organically, this whole deal?
We talked about it.
Chris Farias, who owns the place, he had talked about it. It was his idea.
Because you had done some stuff.
Oh, he owns Motor.
Yeah.
I got you.
And so he had talked about it, and like I was like, yeah, maybe we could do that or whatever. And this was he talked
yes,
about it.
I was really no, season. But I have a really stupid question. Can I wear the fake beard next to you with the real beard, and can we take a picture really?
Sure.
Fast? You're the best.
Okay. That's a lie, but
no, you'll be the best for the rest of it tonight. See, I'm really excited about this.
It might be kind of dark.
Angel, maybe you're not the best person to take it.
I'm not very.
Maybe you're not.
She's way better.
This is dark. Oh Jesus, oh. Angel!
The podcast is ruined.
Well, that's really good. Yeah, I like that a lot. Will you do one? Oh,
Nick leaves a glass there.
Did you smile through your beard?
Probably.
Because I smiled
sure.
through mine.
Yeah.
Exactly. You didn't really, did you?
No. I don't smile.
Much better than yours. It's probably because of my awesome screen, because it's actually correct on both sides.
Oh. Nice.
Thank
you. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yours is way better
than mine. Amanda, how do you deal with this? And why do you deal with this?
On a daily basis.
I can ask you that same question.
Yeah, how do I deal with you? It's a good question.
I think we're all right. It was empty.
Don't take your shoes off.
Yeah.
No one walk up around here barefoot.
Inquirer sports editor Angel Rodriguez broke a glass, so nobody walk around the front of the room barefooted.
Thank you.
It's a public announcement. Just wanted to make sure you knew. I still don't have a beer, so it's going to be a second. But hopefully, thank you again, everybody. This is crazy. There are people here.
Goblet.
Look at that.
I got you a crooked transfer.
Okay.
Oh, that's fine. That is a bell.
Thank you.
You work tomorrow, Trent?
As much as I ever do.
I did.
Quick question. What is that?
Oh, shit.
No, that's thank mine.
Oh.
I'm just clinking.
He's not giving it to you.
Oh, wow. Oh. Screw you. What a beer.
Trent, what are you drinking?
What am I drinking, Nick? This is not what I was drinking.
I'm sorry. I know.
This is a Crooked Tree. It's not bad.
Good. Another one?
not Angel this time. Was that Go-Go? No. I do know you.
Probably, yeah, that's totally it.
Sure.
Yeah, man.
So we've now officially broken more glasses on this show than at Beyond the Struggle.
Yes.
two to one.
Yeah. And we haven't broken
about faces.
Yeah,
and that was, yeah.
Nothing's being recorded, so you're fine.
No, it's still recording.
It's still recording.
Whoops.
All right.
Can you bring it back in?
It's been 6 minutes, so screw it if you can't pee in 6 minutes.
Right. Welcome back to the CDOT podcast. It's presented by Inquirer Sports. This will be the audience participation section of the podcast before we wrap it up and say goodnight. Who has a question? Yes.
What did you think about Albert Pujols going to the Angels? Would you have recommended that if somebody approached you about bringing him to the Reds? I mean, obviously not like Votto, but if that caliber player, when he's in his prime, and there's always a possibility that he's going to decline late in his career, would you have brought that recommendation to the table?
Just in case the people listening to the podcast can't hear it, he asked if you would have recommended signing Albert Pujols being at the end of his career. And do you think that would have been a good move, or was a good move?
That's for Trent, right?
Knowing what I know now.
Yeah, well, exactly. Ignore this season, but what would you have
Yeah,
said?
It. You know, like I was saying earlier, it's really tough to go out and sign the top free agent and try to get fair value. You know, teams do it when they think they're about to win, compete for the World Series, and you need that one more piece. And I really can't fault the Angels for doing that.
For adding 3 or 4 pieces.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I'm sure they went through it and had the resources to do it. On the flip side, yeah, guys, especially now that, unfortunately, there was steroids and now there's not, guys are aging faster than they used to back in 2002, 2003. And so it's risky to sign these guys to the big contracts. And I think he is going to bounce back a little bit. But you sort of have to just take that hit. And, you know, that's why hopefully the way that we did ours, where we're getting a lot of value on the front end when we're paying guys well below what they're worth, you might have to take a hit on the very back end of the contract. And so you just have to think of it in the big picture.
So a little bit on the relationship with the coaching staff. You mentioned kind of being reactive to what they what they're looking for, information they're looking for. But is there any proactive information that you provide in that, you know, we don't think Cozart getting second is a good idea, or whatever it may be? Do you just simply react to what the coaches are asking for, or is there some recommendation on your part?
Yeah, he asked, he wanted to know if the coaching staff, if you only provide information based on what the coaching staff requests, or if you have input that you feel is valuable, do you give them stuff even when you're not asked?
Mm-hmm. I almost never go directly to the coaching staff and tell them anything, but I feel perfectly comfortable to talk to, you know, Bob Miller, the assistant GM, or Walt, or Bill Bavese about any issue that may or may not be something that we think is a longer-term problem. And then I think if it gets to that point, they'll talk to them. In terms of the preparation for series and producing the advance report and that sort of thing, everyone's very receptive to new ideas. So if we come up with something or hear that another team is doing something that we like, or just see something out on the field that we think we can help out with, that's the type of stuff that we'll be proactive about and go talk to them. If it's something that reacting to in terms of something we don't think is going right with the team or the organization, I would never just talk to the coaches. But, you know, there's a mechanism to run it up the ladder and get it to the appropriate people. Hopefully that wasn't too stock of an answer right there.
We all have bosses. That's the answer.
Right.
And we all have proper channels that we have to go through. But there are people in the front office I know who said, I've had this discussion, and you just don't confirm or deny, but I've had this discussion with people in front office said, we don't want this line up, but it would still be put out there. And the bottom line is, the manager makes out the lineup, and the front office can give as much input as they want. but they don't write it out. And there was some input put in on that particular point.
But, I mean, honestly, the lineup in the big picture, it's really more about the eight hitters you have.
Right.
The lineup doesn't impact it that much. There's little things
right, but you
can
you
gain
still
and lose.
Want
right.
Your better players batting more.
Agree.
Ma'am.
No, and trust me, I am the most... I don't care as much about lineups person out there because, trust me, nobody gets it more than me. I don't know if you've noticed on my Twitter page, I do point out that I do not make up.
Well, that lends itself to the psychological side of baseball, too, where just mixing it up for the sake of mixing it up could make a difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems that way, anyway.
There's no metric for that.
Ma'am?
Are you tasked at all to take any numbers from the minor leagues? And if you are, do you see any improvement in that regard or some real guys to keep an eye on?
Yep. She wants to know if minor league players, if the stats collected down there translate or impact once they're in the majors.
And
yeah,
and who to watch.
Sure. It definitely all goes into our projection system when we're looking at players, both for the Reds and other teams. It all gets sort of fed in and spit out the other end. And, you know, we think about how moving up each level impacts a guy's stats, the park he plays in, how old he is. So that sort of all goes into the formula of what we think a guy's ultimately going to become, including what the stats think about the guy. So it all sort of fits together. For the Reds specifically, guys to maybe under the radar to be excited about, a couple of low-round picks like Seth Mejias-Breen had a really good year at Dayton. He's a third baseman. He's got a lot of power. A guy like Juan Silva is an outfielder that played at Bakersfield. He had a good year. We've got some good arms down low in terms of pitchers. Some had good numbers stat-wise. Some have really good arms. We signed a guy, Amir Garrett, and gave him some money. He's a lefty. He's up to 96. So he's a guy that once he's playing basketball right now at college, once he sort of commits to baseball full time, I think we're really excited about him. There's some other names that were at Dayton this year. A guy like Sal Romano is, you know, a pitcher with a good body. We think he can be a starter, sort of a sinker slider, innings eater type of guy. So there's some names out there that I think a year from now, once they have that second really good year in a row or the first good year based on what their tools are, that they're going to be bigger names than they are right now.
Okay, I got a question. You talked about efficiency and value before.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved here recently from Toronto, and I've seen polar opposites. I wanted to ask you on the value of your homegrown players versus there. They're forever bringing in guys from other teams that they pay, I think, a lot more money than what the Reds pay, but I see the performance a lot better here. Can you comment on you know, what the value of developing your own is?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know a better way to rephrase
it.
I think the question was...
Yeah, go ahead.
The question was...
Man, you're hosting too.
Yeah.
Multi-talented.
Does that get me a third beer, maybe?
Yes. Yeah. Sure, it's on Angel.
For the podcast listeners, the question was, how do we, as a small market team, I guess, feel that we get more value and efficiency out of our own homegrown players than going out and finding free agents on the open market? So just the way that the baseball economics work, for the first 6 years of a guy's career, he's paid, for the first three, it's basically at the minimum, and then it sort of ramps up from the third year to the sixth year through an arbitration process. And so for us, with a limited payroll, we definitely have to have guys that are making those low numbers so we can keep players like Bruce and Votto and Cueto. And so that's why we need a Cozart and a Hoover and Frazier and Mesoraco and those guys that are at the low salaries, which helps us sort of put the team together as a whole. And that's definitely a big consideration each winter when we're putting the team together. Where, you know, there might be a guy out there that is a slightly better player than someone, but if we had to pay him, you know, an average player nowadays is getting $8 to $12 million, and we can't just go out and sign that guy every time we need to fill a hole. And so that's where the drafting and the developing of our own players really comes into play.
I feel like here, you will retain your start. Like all the guys you mentioned, mm-hmm. I believe they've all grown up in the system here, whereas if you went through all of Toronto's star players, they've all played.
But and to your point, I mean, you signed, they identified a lot of guys early and signed those extensions to buy out those RB years. And so that you know the cost and security.
Yeah.
The Cueto, the Bruce, well, it, Votto's secured for a little while, too. But you do that, and that is a risk.
Yep.
There's certainly some risk in that. And for every Evan Longoria, there's...
Ricky Romero.
Yeah. You know, there's... Back to Toronto, but... Yeah, I mean...
Sorry about that.
But that is... something that you're seeing, and that's why there aren't as many free agents right now.
Yep.
Because of that trend.
And really, that's a credit to our scouting and player development, where they're drafting good guys with, you know, good tools and potential, and the development people are getting them ready to come to the big leagues. And then, you know, you see a guy like Frazier, he comes up, you know, he might have more strikeouts than you like, but he's really contributing to our team at a low salary, and that has just enormous value for us.
With the addition of the four men to the 40-man, Duran, Lamar, Rogers, and Barnhart, how many of those four, if any, were the additions contingent upon the advanced scouts that you and your department put forth, and how many were possibly just necessity based on losing them due to their age and time in the system?
Yeah, that's a good question. He was asking sort of what the input was of why we added guys to the roster just now that...
Yeah, it kind of follows up on the other question. Yeah, because it's there are all these roster rules.
And yep.
You can understand them better than I do.
Basically, there was guys we had to put on the roster yesterday, or else we would lose them to a draft that happens in December. Is, I guess, the short answer of it. The guys that are down that low, it's more the scouts, especially for our own players, because they've seen them. We have guys constantly going through our own systems. And, you know, Walt's also talking to the minor league hitting coordinator, pitching coordinator, and that sort of thing. And so I would say if there was a huge red flag one way or the other, you know, this guy's stats are so good that we know he's going to get taken. Or on the other side, this guy's tools are so good that we know someone's going to be able to take him. And the way this Rule 5 draft works is you have to keep a guy on the roster for the entire year at the big league level. So it's tough to take a guy out of, say, double A and keep him up there the whole time. So
right. Like the guy that's probably the, I hate to take this over, but nope. the top guy that you guys left unprotected is Arias. And this is a guy who's never had an at-bat in double A.
Yep.
So it's going to be tough for somebody to take Arias and say he's going to be on the big league roster for
right.
a full season.
So it's one of those things where you just have to weigh the risk and reward of putting the guy on the roster, and then you start the clock of how long he can be on the roster before he has to be in the majors versus can this guy actually stick with the big league team. So someone like Lamar, you know, he's a really good runner. He can play center field at a big league level right now. So we thought if somebody liked him, they could carry him as that 25th man, you know, sort of like what Hamilton was at the end of the year for us, and get him through, and then he's theirs forever. So that's why we thought someone like that should be added to the roster. So I'd say it's mostly scouting just because they've seen those guys so much. And then on the statistical side, we just need to sort of circle back and make sure we're not missing anything.
You talked about signing free agents. Now, do agents at all use sabermetrics when they have conversations with you, or do they just talk the typical, he's got a good arm, he's 29, he has doubles, you know?
Yeah, it does seem like they would be a double-edged sword that you could use it against them and they could, the player agent could use it for them.
Yeah, I don't personally deal with the agents that much, probably thankfully, but
no, I'm sure
they do. I've heard just anecdotally that, like, Scott Boras is database computer system is up there with any teams, and they make these crazy, you know, 100-page long presentations. And
well,
that
a couple
of
years ago, like Carl Crawford's guy had iPads, and he gave iPads to each team that had his presentation on it.
But I bet they try to nail down, you know, the personality of the person that they're talking to. If they think it's a statistically oriented person, they're going to lean more that way. If it's a more scouting organization, they might lean more that way. But I could almost guarantee that the agents are thinking about every angle that they can use to play up their players.
I got a chance to talk to you this summer at the Prospectus event, and it seemed like even when you were off the clock, you kind of were looking into a little bit of baseball stuff. Is that typical for you, or, you know, since it's become your job, do you sometimes get like, so overwhelmed to come home and just gotta, like, you know, get into Russian ballet or something?
that's a great question, honestly. No, it really is. You know, he asked, you're around baseball so much, and does sometimes it get old and you need to get into something else like Russian ballet or Premier League soccer or something? I mean, is there something that you need to, is it always baseball, or is there something you do to get away?
No, that is a good question. I am, I guess, thinking about it a lot and probably more than I should. But yeah, during the season, if there's a big game that I want to maybe see a new pitcher, or it's like Pirates Cardinals or something, I'll watch that on TV. But I think I do watch less baseball on TV than I used to over time. And I guess I have various activities that keep me occupied. Like,
walk on the second street.
Yeah. Hanging out with my fiance, for example.
She laughed way too hard when you said that you had other activities. I don't know what that meant.
Speaking of, like, do you have to, like, reclude yourself from playing like fantasy baseball, or do you just absolutely dominate? Because if you're not allowed to play, like, I wanted to talk to you after
this. Yeah. No, it actually, we don't know if this is true, but this might just be like an urban legend that's going around our office, but we think it is part of, like, if you're playing for money, that would constitute gambling on baseball. So we don't play fantasy baseball. And I sort of made a conscious effort to get out of it when I was trying to get a job, because I figured I should be thinking about real baseball instead of fantasy baseball. But I can 100% guarantee that baseball statistical knowledge does not translate to fantasy football success. I know that from experience. So my 4-7 team can back that up.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you're doing now that you think will be sort of mainstream 4 to 5 years from now?
It's a great question. He was talking about how all the stats are available and you look back at it. Is there anything that's kind of out there that you're looking at now that's going to be mainstream in 4 or 5 years?
I think the big thing that really isn't even out there yet is what Trent was talking about earlier, is this field effects stuff. So it's basically a system where it's tracking everybody on the field at every moment. So, you know, say there's a ball that goes out to the right center field gap. Right now we know who caught the ball, who didn't catch the ball, whether it was a double or not. Eventually we're going to know where the center fielder and the right fielder started, how long it took them to get there, how far they each had to go, whether they took the right route or not. And so I think that's where it's just going to explode and go off the deep end. I think of the stuff that's out there now that teams are trying to do is really get a better handle on, you know, injury type of stuff, and seeing if we can prevent injuries more and catch things early in smarter ways and that sort of thing. I think on the statistical side, I think we do pretty much in the big picture what's out there on the internet. You know, like I said, we have our own system, but it's really going in the same direction as what's out there. And it's really, this is above my pay grade, but it's really how you use it and how you put it into practice in terms of the moves you make.
All right, let's take one more question.
In Moneyball, they talked about on-base percentage was undervalued skill, and it seems like in recent years, defense has emerged as something that a lot of teams ignored, and now it's viewed as more important. You mentioned earlier, I think, high strikeout pitchers. Do you see anything, in your opinion, that's an undervalued skill that, you know, maybe a team could take advantage of?
Good question. He's asking sort of what's the current or next undervalued skill that's out there. This is really just off the top of my head. I don't have a answer that I just believe in to my core, but I would say versatility is one that, you know, doesn't get talked about a lot. So this is a couple of years ago, but somebody like Cairo, when he was contributing to the team in 10 and 11, you know, he could play second, he could play third, he could play first, he could hang in at short, he could even go out to left field. And so I think that's something that front offices have known for a long time, and you're starting to see it in guys' salaries. So somebody like Macer is Turris or someone like that.
Skip
Schumacher. Current free agent Skip Schumacher. I think that's one that really helps teams. And, you know, a team like the A's, there's been a lot of talk this year about one of the reasons why they were good last year is they just had 25 players. They didn't put a guy, you know, this guy was our backup shortstop, this guy was our backup catcher. They just had guys that were good baseball players that fit, the pieces fit together. And I think that's something that we've done a good job of in the past, but is maybe undervalued a little bit.
So we might take some more, but that's only going to be for the people who are actually here. We're going to stop recording because you need to come out. December 17th is the next one. We're continuing our All Sam All the Time CDOT show. December 17th, Sam LaCure will be here. Current Reds reliever. Yeah. Fellow facial hair aficionado. Yeah.
Mustaches are undervalued.
Sam, are you on Twitter? Can people find you somewhere that they can...
I have a Twitter account, but I think I'm about to change my handle.
Okay.
Because I don't like my handle, so...
What is it now? And that way, when you change it, you can put one more tweet.
I have to look it up.
All right,
Trent,
tell people how they can find you.
We can find me at ctrent, also at cincinnati.com, which is the Inquirer Media. Inquirer Sports, we're all over the joint. We're doing this kind of stuff. At ctrent. We can find you at...
At Josh Sneed.
That's convenient.
Yeah, it's my name.
Yeah, it works.
Yep. Follow me. I post funny stuff, at least stuff
funny
I think
to
is
you.
Funny. and my t-shirt website, cincyshirts.com.
Where? There
oh,
is.
That's you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. There's some great actual ones. The one, and then it has the little stuff,
walked a guy.
Homer Bailey wears that nearly every day.
I can't tell you how
And you did the Todd Frazier choking
one,
right?
Yeah, we did the Todd Frazier Wilson choking shirt.
And there's a new one. There is a new one that
Which
you put
one?
Up last night.
Oh, yeah. We have this, the official t-shirt of the CDOT podcast. So this is available on a t-shirt at cincyshirts.com. And if you wait a couple hours, enter promo code CDOT, C-D-O-T, and you'll save 20%.
Look at that.
Yes.
How about this? When I change my handle, I'll get Trent to post.
All right.
Okay.
That sounds good. So
I couldn't even find it.
So
right
if
now,
you're so. Listening at home, at your leisure, or in your car, come down to Motor Pub
December 17th.
December 17th.
It's
if
a
you
Tuesday.
Follow the Inquirer, or Trent, or me on Twitter,
we'll
be posting about it.
Way too much.
And
like we did for this one, but it worked.
We'll take some more questions from the people here of Sam.
Because we
cool
still have
that?
Beer.
Yes.
Cool.
All right. Folks, how about a round of applause for Sam Grossman? Say goodbye to the audience at home.
Thanks everyone for coming out.
We'll see you next time on the CDOT Podcast.